The first report was very bad, and Buford rode over and took command. But it was only concussion, and Gamble was back on his feet in a few moments, ragged and dirty. There was a breakthrough on the right, but some junior officers patched it. Lone infantry began bending around the right flank. Buford mounted some men and drove them off. There were moments in smoke when he could not see and thought the line was going. One time when a shell burst very close and left him deaf and still and floating, like a bloody cloud. On the right, there was another breakthrough, hand-to-hand fighting. He rode that way, leaping wounded, but it had been repulsed when he got there. One by one, Califf's guns were being silenced. No one had yet broken away. No one was running, but Buford could feel them giving like a dam. He rode back to the seminary, looked down the road. Nothing. Not much more time. He felt the beginning of an awful anger, an unbearable sadness. Suppressed it. He rode back to the line. The fire was weakening. He stood irresolute in the road. An aide suggested he go to cover. He listened. The Rebs were pulling back, forming to come again. But the Reb cannon were pounding, pounding. He heard the great whirring of fragments in the air, saw air bursts and bright electric sparks. He rode slowly along the smoking line, looking at the faces. The brigades were wrecked. There was not much ammunition. They were down in the dirt, firing slowly, carefully from behind splintery trees, piled gray rails, mounds of raw dirt. They had maybe half an hour. Pull out before then. Save something. He rode back toward the seminary. He climbed the cupola, looked out across the field of war. Wreckage everywhere. Mounded bodies, smoking earth, naked stumps of trees. He could see a long way now above the rolling smoke which had replaced the mist, and the road coming down from the far-off mountains was packed with soldiers, thousands of soldiers, sunlight glittering on jeweled guns. He looked toward the south, and there was Reynolds. He was coming at a gallop across the fields to the south, a line of aides strung out behind him, cutting across the field to save time. No mistaking him. Matchless rider gliding over rail fences in parade ground precision, effortless motion, always a superb rider. Buford blinked, wiped his face, thanked God. But the road behind Reynolds was empty. The general rode into the yard below, dismounted. Buford waited in the cupola, weariness suddenly beginning to get to him in waves. In a moment, Reynolds was up the ladder. "Good morning, John." An immaculate man, tidy as a photograph, soft-voiced, almost elegant. Buford put out a hand. "General, I'm damn glad to see you." Reynolds stepped up for a look. Buford explained the position. In all his life, he had never been so happy to see anybody. But where was the infantry? Reynolds swung, pointed a gloved hand. The blue line had come around the bend. Buford saw with a slight shock the first column of infantry, the lovely flags. Reynolds said softly, "That's the First Corps. The 11th is right behind it." Buford watched them come. He leaned against the side of the cupola. Reynolds had turned, was surveying the hills to the south. There was a set, hard, formal look to him, but a happiness in his eyes. Buford thought, "He has brains to see." Reynolds said, "Good job, John." "Thank you. This is going to be very interesting." "Yes," Buford said. "They seem to be forming for another assault. That's Harry Heath, isn't it?" "Very good. He'll come in here thinking he's up against two very tired cavalry brigades, and instead he'll be hitting two corps of fresh Union infantry." Reynolds smiled slightly. "Poor Harry," he said.
"Yes, sir," Buford said.
"You can start pulling your boys out, as soon as we set up." "Well done. Well done indeed. You can put them out on my flanks. Keep an eye on that north road. I expect Dick Ewell to be coming in shortly."
"Yes, sir,"